table. Don't bump the table. Demon table.
There are very loud birds outside. Or government drones, sorry. Singing their songs.
So I think I don't it's fine.
If you want to shut the window and the door or not.
But, yeah, it's fine. Birds are birds. Whatever. Welcome back to the Dime Gaming Bros podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Spencer, joined by Jacob.
Hello.
Hello. We are also joined by birds outside.
But
we'll
birds
see how
aren't
the
real.
No.
So we were at the movies yesterday, and there was a political ad for, like, join the military, and things kept, like, transforming around all the soldiers or whatever, and then the birds transformed into drones, and I was like, I fucking knew it.
That got a good chuckle out of me. We talk about video games here sometimes.
And political conspiracies.
That's your average gaming channel on YouTube, to be honest. At this point, they're all kind of just... they're all special now.
Crap, I thought we had something unique.
Birds. We should go on a quest to find the one real bird. It's me.
No. No, it's not.
I am the biggest bird. Yes, I am.
You're Donkey Kong.
Monkey. Goodness. So this month I played Modern Warfare 2 from 2022. It is the second game in the rebooted Modern Warfare timeline. Came out in 2022. It's developed by Infinity Ward and obviously published by Activision. It is a direct sequel to Modern Warfare 2019 and its Spec Ops story missions that took place afterwards, introducing a couple of new characters, including the two main characters of this game, Soap and Ghost, who are from the original Modern Warfare 2. They are fan favorites. So it primarily features Task Force 141 and Mexican Special Forces. Unit Los Vecros as they track down a terrorist who is in possession of American-made ballistic missiles. They say missiles a lot in this game. Like, every cutscene, they say missiles about 5 times. So yeah, it's a direct sequel taking place maybe 6 months afterwards. So in my previous review where I talked about Modern Warfare 2019, I said that I had not finished all of the Spec Ops missions because a lot of those were released post-launch and I just hadn't gotten entirely caught up with them. They launched in a really crappy state in terms of difficulty and level design. Apparently, they were ironed out fairly well by the end of it, and the story bits were actually pretty cool. They did introduce the characters teased at the end of that game, Ghost and Soap, who are now in this game as our cold open main characters. So, I like this game, but I have some big asterisks next to it. Jacob will probably agree with me, but in differing degrees. So as a direct sequel, I think it does work fairly well on a character level. I appreciate all of these characters, and I like how well they've developed since the first game and how much personality they're given. And I think it's the thing that holds most of the story together is the characters are very well voice acted. The chemistry is really good, and it's developed fairly well on top of the first game. Pushing Laswell as a main character from the kind of secondary character of the first game into basically being a part of the squad in this game is something that I really liked. She's a cool character. I like the whole, you know, basically what if Oracle actually went on a field mission type. I like that. It's cool. She has a very interesting chemistry with Price, which I like. Soap and Ghost are given a lot of characterization, especially in comparison to the original Modern Warfare 2, where they were basically caricatures. They're great caricatures, but the main crux of the story elements, the character stuff, is about, you know, learning trust and working together and not being a lone wolf. So at the end, when they have their big power of friendship moment and they become Ghost Team because reasons, you know, I like that. I thought it was neat. It's super hammy, but Call of Duty's never been subtle,
right?
So I don't care. I thought it was nice. The Mexican Special Forces characters I thought were fan-fucking-tastic. They are a bit stereotypical, as with any Call of Duty game. They're not super nuanced here, but I do think that they handled them fairly well. Alejandro and Rodolfo are both very good, or Rudy, are both very good. Alejandro is basically like an honorary member of Task Force 141, and I think he's given the most amount of characterization of anyone in this game. It's not like he's a super unique character, but I think they really push his story element very hard. He has the direct connection to the villain characters through, you know, vague backstory stuff, which I think works out pretty well for me. I really like this team of people. As Kyle Gaz Garrick or Gaz in the first game was kind of our new entry point, and it was a very big reworking from the original Gaz in the old games. I really liked him, and I do like how he's presented here, but I do feel like he was a little sidelined for the sake of adding to the squad size wise. He basically is just Price's sidekick, which could be worse, but I think a lot of attention was diverted away from him, whereas I think you could have, I don't know, there might have been a way to consolidate these characters while still using the names, because like I said, Gaz was basically an original character in 2019. He's so different than the original Gaz, so I feel like there's a way to kind of smoosh him together to make it work. But that's not a big deal, I guess. The Urzikstan Liberation Force Commander Farah Karim from the previous game makes a brief appearance in one of the levels, and she sucks, which is really lame because she was like the best character in the last game other than Gaz. She was really well done. She was the big story element. She had the most amount of character work, I guess, and the direct personal connections with the conflict going on, and I think that they handled that fairly well. She basically pops up for one level to be like the, oh, we know a guy. And that's it, which is really disappointing, because she was a fairly complex character, again, for a Call of Duty game. We're speaking in relative terms. And she's basically a glorified cameo here. I hope that she is in some of the spec ops or like additional material for this game. I haven't finished chewing through all of that yet, so I hope that she pops up again. You're basically, you go on a mission, you find out that fucking there are missiles. And the guy, we don't want them to have the missiles. And it tries to pull the Modern Warfare 2, the classic, like, big twist of actually it was an American that you're working for who accidentally did it. And the big story twist, I don't think really nails it here. I like the idea of switching it. So in the original game, Commander Shepard is the big bad guy, basically. You work with him through most of the game, but he is vindictive over the events of classic Call of Duty 4. He's all my men died for nothing, blah, 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 which is great then, but it is very, I would say hokey. It's very boots on the ground. The bad guy does the bad guy stuff himself, you know? And I think with the more modern lens on this current iteration of these games, that 2019 set the precedent for trying to make it less of a Shepard is an evil bad guy to more of Shepard is willingly playing the political game and willing to throw all these teams under the bus just to cover his own ass, I think is interesting, but I do think it makes the personal betrayal a lot less effective. Shepard literally sits in his office this entire game. Like, he's just a bureaucrat. It works. I saw it coming, obviously. It's Shepard. It's a pretty, like, well-known twist. They try to do the personal angle with Shadow Company Commander Graves, who's, like, the head of the, you know, super-secret org of guys that you're working with that nobody knows exists. You work with him for most of the game, going on different missions. They help with air support and so on. And he is, like, the actual arm of Shepard. So they try to pull off the personal, you know, they put the knife in your gut and they twist it with him, and it comes out of fucking left field, and it really doesn't work there. The cutscene in and of itself I really like, because I think the way that the dialogue plays out is great, but I think in terms of the actual plotting, it's like, wait, what? You know? And frankly, all the other bad guy characters in this game are extremely forgettable. Which is normal for Call of Duty. Frankly, every one of these games basically just has, wow, look at the bad brown guy. In 2019, I think it was done okay. It was a little better than normal. This one's pretty disappointing. Wrapping in the Mexican cartel, I think, was done fairly well. It shifts the setting from the Middle East to more of a Mexico base, which was nice. And I do, what's her name? Valeria, the head of the cartel, is well acted for very little material. I like that she kind of goes on the ground and does work herself undercover. That was neat. The plot is pretty thin here, and that's I'm trying to emphasize the characters, because each individual cutscene and character interaction I think is handled pretty fucking well, but the actual, like, mission-to-mission plotting is pretty weak. It's just, we need to go to a place to get more information about the missiles, who has the missiles, where the missiles come from, why do they have the missiles. long story short, spoilers, I guess. Shepard and Graves were doing a mission to give them to one of our allies. They got captured, and because it was a Black Ops mission that no one would actually know about, they can't, you know, be public about, oh yeah, by the way, those missiles are ours. So they need to, you know, tie up loose ends. It's a cool twist. I just don't think it's as dramatic as it thinks it is. The biggest hurdle for this game in terms of tone, story, and plotting is you have to be a reboot of Modern Warfare 2, one of the most like well-known and well-regarded Call of Duty or first-person shooter games of all time. Modern Warfare 2 was the big shift of Call of Duty into the big mainstream blockbuster Michael Bay, blah, 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 blah. And it did that extremely well for the most part. And trying to be a sequel to 2019 as well as a reboot of another game, this is just in a bad spot. Like, there was no way that this was going to turn out like 100% above board. I think this is about as good as I was hoping for in terms of tonal transition from like, ooh, politics, beans, spies, and Black Ops to like big boom, you know? I think this was about as good as I was going to get on that front.
It just felt very confused about what it wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because they already have a game series called Black Ops. You may have heard of it.
Yeah.
But this is the Modern Warfare series.
Yeah. It's just a little all over the place on that front. Characters, for the most part, are fantastic. Story and plot, pretty fucking weak, even for a Call of Duty game. The actual mission selection is pretty 50-50 in terms of layout. So the big gripe with this game, which Jacob will echo, I'm sure, is that most of it is running on the Warfare, the Warzone engine and like asset structure, which basically means that it's all meant to be modular and stuff, which is cool, but it means that half of these levels are like big open areas with very low effort textures and poor enemy placement and like badly broken stealth systems. The other half of the levels I think are really good, but the wide open, clearly this is a Warzone map or is intended to be a Warzone map and then they modified it, just doesn't work well here. I'm all for like modularity and not having to waste resources. I like when they reuse stuff to an extent, but I don't think that works really well here. It really, really shows how dumb the AI is. The enemy AI in comparison, especially to 2019, which had pretty competent AI. It wasn't difficult, but I think it was pretty adaptive.
I strongly hated the enemy AI in this game. So bad.
Yeah.
It's probably some of the worst I've seen.
I would say in this era of first-person shooters, yeah, I've played much worse, but like...
Because...
In recent years, it's pretty fucking rough.
Especially playing on whatever the
Veteran.
Like, I had so many spots where I would have to clear a building, just the first floor, and I knew where the enemies were. And I would try any which way possible to, like, trick bad guys out, or I would stand at the end of the hall and wait for them, but no, you actually have to step past the trigger point on the floor for them to step out of the door. I would come around a corner and instantly get lit up by enemies, like, turning 180 and headshotting me. Like, it was horrible.
Yeah. I think during the linear levels, the AI is acceptable, but it is definitely in the bigger stuff. A clear downgrade from 2019. Like I said, that game wasn't super hard, but I think the AI was fairly adaptive within the limited space, like map-wise, that it had.
I think you basically just said it, but I'm going to say it again. Like, there was one place in particular where it was like a couple of houses looking out over a field in between them, and there's like helicopters flying by shooting everything, and there's like AI friends in between me and the bad guys, and then all the bad guys would shoot me from like four houses away.
Yep. Yeah, that was my experience on most of these levels as well. During those larger, open, more Warzone-based levels, there's a stealth system if you want to call it that, that's implemented, that's really fucking bad.
I think it's a sneak system.
Sure.
It's not a stealth system. It's a sneak system.
It's your basic, you have to crouch to be quiet and don't sprint, don't kill anybody. If you kill them, you have to do a melee kill so it's quiet. Distracting enemies so they don't see you, using smoke bombs. It's all pretty shit. And they emphasize it pretty heavily in this game. There's a few, like I said, the big open levels. The all gillied up ripoff in this game is pretty fucking busted on that front.
Oh, it was so bad. Yeah. There was so much popping.
There's a couple of spots where I also had, like, difficulty telling where the AI trigger wires were because just it was so... I genuinely got stuck on there for a couple of hours just trying to sort out how to stealth through a section, and it turns out you just have to kill them.
Yes.
I didn't know until I looked up a guide, because they will find you no matter what you do.
That was the lighthouse one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that one is so big, and you get a sniper rifle, so you're supposed to shoot from pretty far away, right?
Uh-huh, no.
It's so big that enemies don't spawn in until you're standing close enough.
Yep. Yeah, not good. Not good at all.
The sneak system.
Yeah. There is also an entire level based on sneaking and being stealthy. You can perform kills. I did not perform kills because I'm cool like that.
I pretty much said fuck it and shot everybody.
In addition to the sneaking / stealth system, the big thing that I think this game was trying to push, and I understand, but I don't like, is the backpack system. Basically, on most levels, you'll have access to a backpack where you have lots of tools. You're able to collect smoke grenades, flashbangs, Semtex, C4, like basically every type of lethal or non-lethal that you'd pick up in any other Call of Duty game, you can collect them all in your backpack. And then during certain levels where you don't have a lot of resources, you can find parts and craft, you know, impromptu bombs and knives and stuff. I like the backpack level. I like the backpack system during some levels where I like having like a variety of grenades and stuff. That's neat. But on the levels where it wants you to go into all these houses, rip apart a bunch of fans, bust open boxes, and like make bombs, I like those types of systems in games. I really do, but I don't think it worked here very well, like, at all. Most of the game was me finding parts and then never using them because yep. I was trying to stealth the whole thing anyways.
It came across as like, hey, we really liked The Last of Us. We should try to fit that in a Call of Duty.
Which is insane, because that was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So fucking weird. Yeah, just not great on that front. And that's one of the linear levels. I believe in total there are 16 levels. I would say about half of them I enjoyed somewhat thoroughly. Like I said, the linear ones. The one on the cargo ship with the moving boxes was cool. It's like, I believe it's the one where you're trying to get to the, like, the actual missiles. There's one on a boat, which is cool. There's a few that are just bleh. Least favorite level,
Did they reuse the oil rig level? I swear there was one in the beginning and one near the end.
No. That was 2019.
No.
Yes. That's a common Call of Duty set piece as well. No, it's not in the set. No.
All right, now I gotta look it up.
No, you start off on the oil rig, and then you go on the boat. What turns out to be my least favorite level was actually Jacob's favorite level, I think. There is one where they make you interact with the war zone elements of cars, and it's fucking garbage. So you start off in a helicopter, you are... it's the level with Farah, again, my mommy. And so you start off in a helicopter, you're trying to track down a car in this big convoy, and you fall out of the helicopter. There's a cool section where you're upside down trying to shoot people off of cars. That was cool. And then you start hijacking vehicles, and you just have to plow through a 30-minute level, hopping from car to car, shooting people, avoiding mines, and it was fucking miserably broken. It just glitching out into oblivion, horrible amounts of pop-in, like, really, really repetitive set pieces within the level. Four vehicle types, the same enemies. It was really fucking rough. Not a fan whatsoever of that one. Oh my gosh. it made me very, very annoyed because I kept glitching through the cars. I'd jump off of my car onto another one and would just fall through, or I'd slide off the hood and then go in front of the car and get eaten by the car.
I had that once or twice, but no, it wasn't that it was my favorite level. It was just probably my favorite moment from the game when I'm trying, when my character was rappelling out of the helicopter and got stuck and was hanging upside down and shooting at the bad guys. It was like, whoa! And it was cool for a minute.
Yeah, the first 4 minutes are solid, but the rest of it is painful, at least for me. So yeah, level design, pretty 50-50, case-by-case basis. Brain. Graphics-wise, it's okay. This is definitely a downgrade from 2019, which is odd. So Modern Warfare 2019 was a massive overhaul of the Call of Duty engine for the company. Finally, they took a few extra years to rework the engine massively, and it showed really well. And then they cut off like half of the features that were in that version of the engine for every iteration afterwards. For Cold War, Vanguard, and Modern Warfare 2, they're all kind of a downgrade from 2019. I don't know why. I would assume that there's a tech reason for it, but I think it's bullshit. The game looks okay. It's not bad by any means, but it definitely pales in comparison to its predecessor. The pre-rendered cutscenes are very good. They're very smooth. The character models are definitely, I'd say, a little more cartoony than they were before, but that's fine. They're just a little more simplified. The in-game, like the rendered in real-time cutscenes and QuickTime events look okay. They're fine. Sometimes the mouth tracking is a bit rough. The hair, I think, was the biggest visual issue that I kept bumping into, was hair was pretty rough across the board, which was, I think, my favorite standout from 2019 was how good the hair looked, but
and
here it's
a common complaint that I had from Black Ops Cold War too. It felt very, very similar.
Yeah, it's just felt like a very stripped down version of it. Which I think for the most part has to do with the lighting engine. The lighting is still for the most part very solid here. It hides a lot of the graphical problems and the pop-in and stuff like that, but I do think 2019 had a much better handle on how to use shadow and lighting. It also had a literal lighting system. Like, you can hide in the shadows, and if you have your night vision goggles on, it'll tell you, like, how hidden you are. I loved that. It was a very little touch that barely came up, but it was nice. In this game, you can hide in the shadows. It interacts with the stealth system, but, like, not clearly. It doesn't communicate very well to you what the hell's going on. So I think that was the bigger difficulty. It felt like there was a lot more ambient lighting, if that makes any sense. Like, 2019 had a lot more direct, harsh lighting. You know, you can see the light bulb in the wall.
Yep.
But in this game, it has a lot more of that film set quality where just kind of everything is lit all the time, even on night levels. And
speaking of lighting, though, you want to talk about that super cool bug we both had at near the end of the game?
Yeah, I was getting there. Yeah. So the lighting was very functional, but just definitely a solid downgrade. There was a massive bug that I had on the last or second to last level where the lens flares would get stuck on my vision.
Oh, you only had it for the second to last level? I had it for like the last three levels.
What the fuck?
Yes.
Yeah, so the lens flares would get stuck on my screen and would like collect as the level went on.
Yep.
So my screen would get blurrier and blurrier as everything went on. And because the final level, the beginning, is a spot where you need to be sneaking in an area with smoke grenades and lasers, I could not tell what the fuck was going on, and I stumbled through that for like 30 minutes.
I didn't finish the game. I think I where did I leave off? I think it was the prison break level. So I have like one or two left, and I was just like, I cannot.
Yeah. Really weird tech issue. I couldn't tell you how that happens, but it was really weird.
It seemed like the lens flares, it's not that they got stuck on the screen, it's that they were always visible, because you could like put a wall in between you and the source and it would still be there.
Yeah.
And But you were seeing all of the lens flares on the entire level through buildings, like, it was
very,
everywhere.
Very, very bizarre. So that was fucking pissing me off. And yeah, as you said, the pop-in was my most persistent technical issue. I blocked it out after a while. I just stopped caring. I kind of expect it for most things. I'm not sitting here like bemoaning, oh, it's only loading 4 chunks instead of 5 chunks, like whatever. But especially on like the vehicle level, the bushes will fucking spawn in 10 feet in front of you.
Yeah,
it's so, like, it's at nonstop. That
point, don't even bother.
Right. It's really weird. Which contrasts a lot with the skyboxes, because I think the skyboxes in this game look really good, and a lot of the... There's a level where you go off into the mountains and go hide in the woods, which I thought was very, very linear. But I thought that the actual environments looked very solid, and I didn't have any pop-in issues there. But the moment you put me in a vehicle or just, like, in a large environment with more than 50 feet, maybe, visible in front of me, the pop-in would be nonstop. Which is just a computing problem. Like, it just means that the processing can't, like, handle the graphics that it has, which is weird, because the graphics were a downgrade. So, I really don't know what's going on with that. Although, to speak its praises on a technical side, the game isn't 250 to 500 gigs.
True.
So there's that going for it. Yep. It's still like a modular download. You can download the campaign and the multiplayer and Warzone separately.
And that's all very good.
Yes, that is good. But even its collective amount is less than Modern Warfare 2019. So either they cut out half of the files and just literally axed everything, or they compressed everything so much that the game never learned how to, like, open the file again, which is really weird. I think the total download for me was like 90 gigs, maybe. I have all of it installed as far as I'm aware, and that's more acceptable, at least. So yeah, tech, I think, is the biggest problem with this one. In total, it feels really rushed. It feels like they cut a lot of corners from a production side, despite it having a full 3-year life cycle. And this is the first Call of Duty game that's produced by more than one major studio. They have consolidated sort of how their studio systems work, whereas you have the one major studio working on a game now that they're moving away from annual releases. And then the other, so Treyarch, Sledgehammer, and Raven, I believe, are all working supplemental on, like, multiplayer, Warzone, and, like, post-launch updates, which I think is a very good idea in the longer term to kind of change the ecosystem over at Activision. But for this game to have had such a long development cycle, longer than most of them, and yet half of the game, at least campaign-wise, is made with Warzone elements, is buggy as hell and, like, graphically underwhelming, I think, is a solid spot to put it on. It's really weird. The score was a point of contention for me outside, like, before I played the game. Sarah Schachner is one of my favorite composers working right now. And the score here is okay, but she had already disavowed the game, like, before it came out. She said, oh yeah, by the way, I did the work, but they used it in a way I don't like and I don't appreciate, and I don't want to have anything to do with this. So there's that. She worked on 2019 and did a very good job there, so I don't know what the hell happened there. Campaign-wise, I played on Veteran. I took 16 hours in total for Completionist. I did 2-ish playthroughs. I did 1 straight through on Veteran, and then I got a second run on...
Hardened?
No.
Realistic?
No, Newbie. The what is it? The stupid Recruit. There we go. On Recruit to get the level-specific achievements. So in total, it was about 16 hours, including the multiple times I got stuck on levels. I think if it's functioning correctly, it should be about 8, I think is the idea. But the pacing gets seriously hampered by the tech problems and buggy AI. I probably will not play this campaign ever again. I might revisit a couple of levels, like Wetwork was one of my favorite ones. The AI system is broken, but I do like being a little scuba boy and sneaky shooting people. I'm a big sucker for that. So multiplayer wise, I calculated about 25 hours or so. I am level 50-ish. I like it.
That's after putting like 20 levels on my account.
No, I calculated yours.
Okay.
Yeah, no, in total, I have 25 hours and then 50 levels on my account and probably like 5 on yours. I like it. It's solid. There are some gripes I have, which I will outline momentarily. But on the whole, I think the multiplayer is the reason why this game is going to have a lifespan. The Call of Duty coming out this year, I believe, is up for contention as to what it's going to be, because they moved away from the annual release cycle, and yet they're releasing a game 1 year after the last game, so I'm not sure what's going on with that. I think they're doing MW3 remaster this year. I think that's the rumor.
That'd be
maybe
cool.
To like kill time, which is fine. Yeah. I expected that at some point. I don't know. I really don't know. But I think the way that they have designed it in the long term is probably a good thing. And frankly, I've had the most fun playing this with people than I've had playing a multiplayer game in a while, other than Halo, because it's the only thing I play anymore. So the maps are fine. Some of them are a bit bland, but we have officially moved away from the crappy three-lane map design that Call of Duty was stuck on for quite a while. The maps, I would say, aren't the most visually interesting, but the layouts are pretty solid for me. And especially after playing them for so long, a lot of them grew on me. A lot of them work really well with specific game types. I like free for all and kill confirmed and so on. So I think a lot of the smaller maps work very well for that. The bigger maps work well for Dominion and Invasion and whatever the hell the other big game mode is. And those all function pretty well. Turns out Call of Duty is doing Battlefield better than Battlefield right now. So that's nice. Playing on a big map with, I think it's 25v25 maybe, was pretty cool. No real tech problems there. Just I suck. So in a big setting, I die a lot. I didn't really have any maps I didn't like, after playing them enough. I got used to most of them. My favorite, I don't remember what it's called, but there's one that takes place exclusively at night and you have to use lasers, and I really like that one. That is, like, hands down my favorite map for this game. Works really well for close to mid range, which is cool. There's also a hyper close range one on a cargo ship, which is fucking hilarious to play on, like, free for all, because it's just nanoseconds before you die. It's
gun
very
game fun. On that one was fun too.
That was so fun. It's insane, and your kill death ratio is gonna be crap, but like, it's super fun. It uses simultaneously a class and operator system. The operators are basically just skins. As far as I can tell, there are no actually unique benefits to any of them. They're just skin variants, basically, so you can play as some of the campaign characters if you've paid for them, or various other somewhat unique characters within the factions. That's fine. I don't really care. I just don't care when it comes to that. The problem I have with the operator systems in a lot of games is that they have very unique playstyles, and I don't like that in, like, a military shooter. I like playing arcade arena shooters like Halo, or I do like Overwatch and like Valorant and stuff to an extent, but I don't like when a lot of games try to push that into like a militarized setting. It just feels weird for me.
I think Tarak was the only map I didn't like. It was the sandy one that's wide open.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. That one could be pretty rough. So the operators
that's
are
the only one I didn't really like.
Yeah. So the operators are pretty inoffensive. I think about half of them are unlockable by different in-game challenges, and the other half are purchasable, whatever. You can make custom classes. I think the gunsmithing in this game is on par with 2019. I really like it. I like how well everything unlocks. It's weird that pretty much, I'm never going to get used to the whole everyone starts with the same guns, but everyone develops them at a different pace type mechanics. That's just because I have Halo brain. So I like even starts, or I'm playing like Fiesta where everything's randomized. Call of Duty has a, just in general, the way that weapon progression works in all of its multiplayers doesn't really gel with my brain, but here it's fine. It's not like it bothers me. It's just, everyone starts with an M4. Wow. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But the actual gunsmithing, I think, it's in-depth enough where it makes clear differences, and it looks great, but it's not so much where I feel like if I'm using the same, like if I'm using a stock weapon.
Plane.
Military plane. It's a UAV.
They're listening to us.
True. They're sending their best.
Wizards of the Coast sends the Pinkertons. Call of Duty sends the U.S. military.
Yeah. I like the gunsmithing system. I think it was 2019 that introduced like this massive iteration of it, I think. Don't quote me. But I do like how specific it is. It's cool. All the attachments are functional. They unlock at a decent pace, for me anyways. All the guns have different level caps, which I think is cool. So it means that you can, you know, some guns you have to get 24 levels to max out. Some of them are 30, whatever. I like that. It adds variety. I don't know if there's rhyme or reason to it, but I don't care enough to look into that.
Weapon unlocks seem to be paywalled.
There are some that are paywalled, yes.
It seemed like most of them were either challenge or paywall. Like
challenge is the correct way to do anything, but...
Yeah, that seems cool, but, like, it seemed like most other Call of Duties that have played multiplayer, it's like, hey, you finally hit level 3 on this gun, you get another gun, or whatever, but this one is extremely challenge heavy, where it's like you have to get 20 thrown knife headshots to unlock the hatchet or something. Like, it seemed very different and much harder.
I guess, I don't know, with how heavily monetized the game is, which is going to be that's my big gripe with the multiplayer. Yeah. I think I'd rather have an extremely difficult challenge system for the half of the weapons and attachments that are usable for free than just have them unlocked by like level progression. But that's a preference thing, I guess. But yeah, about half of the multiplayer operator skins and weapons are purchasable either in store via limited events or the season pass system.
The season pass sucked.
The season pass is hot trash. I will not pay for it. When I was playing this, it was on season 4, I believe. And it just... The map is weird. The way that it's laid out is weird. The weapon... The like unlocks on the season pass are really imbalanced in terms of like value. Yeah, perceived value anyways. Like, it'll be a calling card and then like a new gun. It's really up and down.
I think it's the worst season pass I've seen as a free player. Like, Destiny 2 was better to its free players. Rocket League is better. Halo Infinite is probably the best season pass right now for free players. Like,
yeah, because this and the whole season pass is off limits to free players. It's all paywalled.
Yes.
It's really weird. The shop in and of itself, I skimmed through. It's fine price-wise for stupid skins and fucking operator skins and whatever. The pricing is inoffensive, but the fact that we are at the point in this game's life cycle where now people are playing as Homelander from The Boys. Every game hits this point, and I have accepted that because that's how live service games work. It's just fucking annoying. So it's not like it's egregious, but it definitely could have been handled better. We're not talking, you know, Battlefront 2 levels of bad. It's not, you know... Well, I don't feel dirty after opening this game up, but I would...
Battlefront 2 or the new Battlefront 2?
You mean before they got sued into Oblivion? Yes. Battlefront 2. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, nowhere near that bad, but not great. It just...
Because the new after being sued Battlefront 2 is
pretty
good. Fun.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Still going pretty strong, too, servers-wise, yeah, which is nice. So multiplayer was... solid. I had a lot of fun. I played a lot with Jacob and with our buddy Colin from our other podcast. You know, maybe a third of my total play time multiplayer wise was with some hooligans. I appreciated that. So that was nice. I don't know. It's been a while since I've done that with a Call of Duty. Despite liking Modern Warfare 2019 more, I appreciate that I actually caught this one during its the active part of its life cycle with a strong player base and was able to get some good matches out of it. Because that's nice. And that's kind of what multiplayer games are about, so it's got that going in its favor. On the whole, I bought this for $60, which is about $10 off the like launch price. It's still floating in the $60 to $70 range right now. I played it on the Xbox Series X console outside of some hours logged on Jacob's multiplayer on his PS5. If this was $20, it would be a goddamn steal. But paying launch price for this was kind of rough. I do wish I waited longer, but I also don't, because then the player base wouldn't be so active and the matches wouldn't be so fun. Despite the fact that I'm playing with people who have 6 times as much log time as me. Jeez. 6 times as much log time as me. It's still very fun. And I don't know what trade-off I would take. If I would have bought it in 6 months when it's cheaper, or if I would have just keep it now because I got like a lot of multiplayer time out of it. So I really don't know. I don't think this one's going to hold up as well in the longer term outside of the multiplayer portions. I think the player base will keep going for a while because the next couple of years of Call of Duty are a little all over the place and no one seems to know what's going on. But I do think in, say, 10 years, this game will be nowhere near as revisitable as even, like, Cold War. Even though Cold War has some pretty shit multiplayer, in my opinion, the campaign holds up pretty well on that front. This one is such a mixed bag on that front. So I'm sitting this at, like, a... I hate numbers, but I'm going to do numbers anyway. It's like somewhere between a 6 and a 7. It's not great. There's a lot of problems, but I would still put it in the positive side of things. I had a lot of fun. I'm still playing it, but I'm not going back to the campaign anytime soon.
Speaking of hot garbage.
Yeah.
Not worth the price of admission.
Yes, there we go. Yeah, there you go. Good transition. We watched Rampage, which is apparently based on the hit arcade game of the 80s, question mark.
Ooh.
Might have been the 90s.
I'm not sure. I want to say 90s.
Good arcade game. One of the worst movies I've watched in the past few years. And I've seen probably approaching 1,000 movies in the past, like, 5 years. This is ungodly levels of bad. I had fun memeing.
Oh, Rampage, 1986.
Damn. Arcade game is great. This movie is an incoherent mess of really, really shoddy special effects and Dwayne The Rock Johnson doing the most Dwayne The Rock Johnson performance I've ever seen him do.
Yeah. Yeah. I have nothing nice to say.
That is true. That's what I concluded with as well, was like, the only thing I liked to any extent was the monkey flipping him off. That's all I got. Like, nothing looks visually appealing. The special effects are really shoddy. The green screening is disgustingly bad. The dialogue is... I think I could smear shit on a wall better than this.
Prove it. No balls.
Dude, I'll fucking do it. I'll fucking do it. I'll make a good monkey movie. What the fuck did this have to do with the video game?
Nothing.
It's literally just an excuse to throw big animals on screen.
There was nothing. There's the whole time I watched it, I was like, why am I watching this? What is the point of this? Like, it doesn't even feel like a typical monster movie, we're gonna destroy the Earth with cool special effects. Like, there's nothing. It tried to develop the character of the monkey.
Did it, though?
That's one of its biggest goals of the whole movie.
I guess.
Ugh.
It was really bad. I had lots of fun sitting there joking with you, but that was the enjoyable part, was us making fun of it.
I had too much to drink while watching this.
I did not have enough to drink while watching this.
Still did not have fun.
I did not have enough to drink while watching this. Maybe another, like, 5 drinks and I would have enjoyed it a little more. Oh my gosh. It was... I don't remember which one of us described it as such, but by the time we were done, it was described as the most, like, movie within a movie thing ever.
Well,
like,
that
it's...
was you.
Of course it was me. Like, it's the most fake stock, we have to show a movie in the background of our movie type crap that I've seen in my life. Like,
it felt like a tax write-off.
Seriously. Like, this would have... I would rather watch, like, a 12-year-old's first, like, Star Wars fan film than this. 10 out of 10. Any day.
It's now tied for the worst movie of my year of viewing movies.
With what?
Tekken.
Poof. Foofda. You had like 2 positive things to say about that, and you're like, the one thing was cool, I guess. So that's
yeah.
Rough.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Foof. That sucks. Never watching this again under any circumstances. I don't think you could pay me to watch it. We watched this for free on Max, and I still regret the price of admission.
You could hold a gun to my head, and I would just take the bullet.
Yeah. But would you take the big pokey spear through the chest, like the monkey?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
But only if it's the monkey putting the big pokey spear through my chest.
Where was the monkey's dick during all of this? I hate to be that guy, but like, the monkey doesn't have shorts on. And they say, like, they say a lot of curse words in this movie, and there's a surprising amount of blood, but like,
it's still PG-13.
Somehow I get where. Who is this for? It's a dumb monster movie for children. It has the sensibilities of one. It's like, oh, but then they just smash into buildings. But also, it's like bloody.
I don't know.
I have no idea what this is. Yeah, tax write off. This is money laundering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel bad that you have to clip this out and make it a 3-minute YouTube video.
Yeah, such is life. This is the price I pay for my sins of being monkey.
Speaking of prices you pay for sins,
ooh,
we don't have news collected for this month because it's been an ass month and we didn't feel like it. So we're skipping a news.
You say nuts. We, meaning me. I completely forgot to collect anything. There was a couple of things I remember vaguely, but like there wasn't a lot of like really big stuff this month. So I was planning on just doing it last minute, and then this weekend has been very busy. So
no news.
Oopsie doopsie fucky wucky. Hopefully something exciting happens next month. Something exciting did happen for you though.
Oh yeah? What was that?
You played a game.
Did
a good one.
Oh.
I think it's a good one.
Okay.
I want you to tell me your thoughts about it though.
BioShock Infinite is the third entry in the BioShock series, developed by Irrational Games and published by 2K. One of the sounds constantly burned into your head, right?
Yeah.
2K. It was released for the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, PC, and OS X in 2013. and since then, re-released for modern consoles in the BioShock Collection.
Which is a really bad excuse of a re-release, by the way. Just letting you know. It's pathetic. They did, though, we put the PC settings on max and put it in a new box thing.
They remastered the first two, so it'd be kind of dumb to not throw in the third one.
They did not remaster those things. Okay. They did not. They did, though, we turned the settings up and then put it on a new disc.
Wow.
Really bad.
For the story, the game starts out with you, Booker DeWitt, arriving at the City in the Clouds, Columbia, with the mission of rescuing the girl locked up in the tower, just like Reputa de Buta. There are so many spoilers from there on, and yet the story also kind of feels like a paint-by-numbers, barring a couple of twists. When this game came out, I didn't know anything about BioShock, and I saw that there was a lot of discourse about the end. So I remember watching it so long ago, but thankfully it didn't make any sense to me. Colombia seceded from America when the guy in charge thought he could do government better. It's not a spoiler. When I saw, he doesn't. So this was a fun game to try streaming on Twitch to see if that's something we can do with this show going forward. There are open discussions about segregation, with different sections of the city built for different statuses and skin color tones.
If the first BioShock was like maybe kind of subtle, not really, about its politics, this game is a sledgehammer.
Yeah, subtle as a train hitting you in the face.
I love it.
You love trains.
I do love trains!
Beans.
Yeah!
Some of the audio logs I found were made by the bad guy, and he's written to be horribly racist and sexist and all of the other ists, which is obviously written, but still a great memory for my first official streams for this show.
You mean the first time he just drops the N-word in the game?
Awesome.
Yeah. Classic gamer moment.
The world building is one of this game's strongest suits. Columbia feels like something that could kinda maybe happen someday. The backstory of the city is well thought out and explained through the audio logs and the kinetoscopes, which are little videos you can find in public displays. Those weren't great because they were very slow moving and not very interesting to look at. The event they depicted happened with very long, slow shots. I was trying to watch all of them for the achievement, which I didn't get.
Oof.
But I usually check my phone with these especially when I walked into a hallway and there's three of them side by side by side. Everyone's favorite information source, Wikipedia, claims that Columbia was clearly written to depict American exceptionalism. I can see that.
I sense a but.
But I wonder if it's not quite. It could just be my worldview getting in the way, but I think this was written against Christian nationalism.
Yes! Give me a high five. For once we agree on something. Yay!
Maybe I'm just splitting hairs.
You either, kind of are, but yes.
Either way, the worldview the writers are clearly having a problem with is flat out wrong. The reason I'm making the distinction is because the bad guy has a lot of seeming Christian-ish noise that he built his empire on. A miracle birth. Prophecies about that child. Prophecies about the country he's built. Prophets, angels, etc. With all these beans out in the open, I want to share a piece of trivia I witnessed in real life.
Oh boy.
Fox News got in trouble one time because they stole the logo for this game to have on a TV behind the show host, and they like changed some of the letters on it, but it was definitely the same logo, and they got in trouble, and I think that is beyond ironic.
That's awesome. I love that for them.
I was pretty skeptical about this game from the outside because of the basics of the story. In my mind, it seemed like the creators were just remaking the first game. A guy goes to a new weird cyberpunk, steampunk place that is distant from the rest of the world, except in this one, instead of going down under the ocean, he goes up into the sky.
Whoa.
Oh. This new place was designed to be utopia, but the guy in charge is a terrible person, actually.
True.
After having played the game, the comparisons remain, but I can say that this game is distinctly different enough that I don't care about the similarities. It doesn't feel like as much of a repeat as it seemed from the outside. Moving on to visuals, in keeping with BioShock tradition, Columbia is a steampunk city. I love little doses of the different kinds of punk, just not too much, like cosplaying with a fist on a piston or something. It can be overdone, but this is Columbia nails the balance of imagining a divergent technology evolution and steampunk. Super cool.
I love steampunk.
The lighting in this game is interesting. I don't know how they did it. I want to make it clear that I'm only guessing. It seemed like they were trying to make it look like ray tracing does today, but achieved that like 10 years ago. There are times when you are meant to look at a statue and it's placed in front of the sun, so you have light beams backlighting the statue. Looks great. It was in the promotional stuff. However, shadows are kind of wonky, especially when they're on characters' faces, like up close looking at you and turning their head. It's like, ooh. There were some clear corners cut on the graphics to squeeze out power elsewhere. Maybe because it was designed for consoles? I don't know. Again, I'm guessing. That same backlit statue, I turned 180 degrees and looked at what was behind me, and I found a couple baskets of apples.
I love apples.
These apples were a flat texture that was copied and pasted and formed into a weird box shape inside of the basket. It looked like something out of an OG Tomb Raider or GoldenEye on the 64 or something like that.
That rings a bell, honestly. It's been a while since I played Infinite, but that definitely sounds familiar.
By no means was this common in the graphics. It was just a weird choice to even have baskets of apples in the street when they looked like ass.
Assballs.
A game development cheat that did kind of get in the way of gameplay was leaving or entering sections of the city. The transitions usually meant a hallway or a platform and then a hard door. Are you sure you want to leave this area? Or a painfully slow elevator used to hide a loading screen. It wasn't constant, but it was often, and there was definitely variety. Sometimes instead of a slow elevator ride, it was a gondola ride to a different section.
Like the gondolas.
But by the end of the game, it got kind of old.
Those skyboxes are so pretty.
Don't misunderstand, the game does look good. The art style is kind of like Borderlands, but less drastic or extreme or cartoony. I don't know.
It's definitely a less serious art style than the first two games.
Yeah.
I mean, it was mostly a setting thing, but... This was what, 2012? 2013?
Yeah, he already said it.
What I'm did dumb. I say?
2013.
Yeah. Oof, yeah, because that would have been... They could have pushed this for next gen at the time, and they didn't. That's weird. Because the first Bioshock was, like, 2007.
There was a section in an old abandoned building, I think it was an asylum, where there were, like, dust particles everywhere, and it looked really, really good. So, my complaining about the graphics is kind of...
imbalanced,
finding things to complain about, I guess.
Yeah,
but the rest of the game really, really does look good. Moving on to sound design, audio logs are so crispy. I love them a lot.
They actually play when you're moving around.
They seem to be vinyl recordings in some sort of portable player, and they sound so good.
Dude, can you imagine if we had, like, portable vinyl players, like when we had those CD players in the mid-2000s?
It'd be so bad.
That would be horrible, but it would be cool.
I also enjoyed that they were mostly placed in areas where nothing would really happen. I had to backtrack or progress to the next thing, and that was going to take a minute, so I might as well listen to this audio journal that I found and adds context to the area I'm in. Holy cow. Game design. Wow.
Holy cow.
Voice acting is perfect. I didn't have any issue with the dialogue that was written or any of the deliveries. Near the end of the game, like the last level or two, the lip syncing was a little bit off, but I don't care. The vigors sound great, which is like the superpowers that you have on your left hand. And appropriate to the element they are using. The fire vigor goes woof, and the electrical shock goes zap. Guns go brrrr.
I'm saving that clip. That's great.
I really got nothing. Gameplay, though. Playing the game really is fun. It never felt like auto-aim took over, which is perfect because shooting felt great. It was tough to get used to the button layout, right trigger shoots, right bumper swaps guns, and clicking the right stick aims down the sights. This is because the left trigger shoots the equipped vigor, and the left bumper swaps vigors. So, a gamer brain would accidentally pull both triggers trying to shoot, and I would zap a guy and shoot him, and it was like, ah, crap.
Yep.
holding the left trigger for a second creates a vigor trap, which I thought was a really cool idea. Unfortunately, I stuck to the same two or three vigors throughout the whole game out of eight, because I liked how they worked with my playstyle. I think there are too many guns, especially when some of them seem far too similar. This leads to way too many upgrades to purchase. Each gun has three or four upgrades, and vigors have at least two upgrades each. The fandom site says it takes almost 22,000 in-game coins to fully upgrade all the guns, and 14,500 in-game coins for the vigors. It felt like there was a huge difficulty spike about halfway through the game that I just never got over. I can point to the exact moment it happened, too. It was when I had the first fight with Columbia's version of the Big Daddy called a Handyman. It's probably in part because I said on stream, oh, I haven't died yet. But I think there are other factors. For the first half, I was one-shotting enemies with my melee. But after that fight, it would take progressively more and more hits to kill just a basic enemy with a melee. Enemies seemed to get spongier in general as the game progressed. I was so close. I was at the second to last boss fight, and I finally changed the difficulty down from hard to medium. I just couldn't do it. Each death costs coins, and there were a couple of times I got down to zero monies. The final fight is kind of bullshit, too. It felt like I got stuck in a loop until a certain event happened. I don't really want to spoil it, but you need to progress the fight, and there are a couple of different fronts, and it one front needs to be diminished for the other one to stop. Otherwise, the second one just keeps respawning. It was not good. The coolest thing that I remember from the promotional stuff back when this was released is the roller coaster style rail system that connects all around the city. You monkey noised over my difficult sentence. Roller coaster style rail system.
I love getting railed.
That connects all around the city. There's a cool glove that you get early on that is equipped with a hook that lets you ride this rail system around. I always imagined that would be how you're supposed to get around the city. Imagine like landing on a planet in Destiny. Cool places connected by stretches of loading areas basically full of nothing, which is cool. But in this, my first playthrough, I found that it was much closer to Doom. Arenas with jump pads or teleporters to help you get around the mobs and try to flank the killer horde. Elizabeth, the girl you save from the tower, is surprisingly helpful. And I say surprising because it always feels like an AI character that literally follows you is only there to get in the way.
Boy!
In this game, however, she quickly hides whenever you enter a fight. There was a heavy emphasis on this one animation where she throws you something she found, be it health or fuel for vigors or ammo or coin. But it was always the same animation. It felt weird and way overused, like there was supposed to be something more to it and that got cut, or maybe someone high up in the development made the animation and it had to be included.
Booker, here!
She also summons items inside the arena, like cover to hide behind, a weapon rack, all kinds of different things. As the player, you don't have a crazy amount of choice about what can be summoned and where. It's just a set couple of things in their set location. Finally, Elizabeth has the knack of picking locks. As long as I had lock picks, she could pick the giant glowing padlocks that I found. At first, I didn't like having to rely on her to pick the locks, because there's a couple times she's Princess Peached by the bad guys and I was working solo.
Ugh.
But I came around on the concept. It adds to the relationship between Booker and Elizabeth, having to work together and trust each other, etc., etc.
Power of friendship.
Yes. Those are all the notes I've written. I really don't know how I feel about this game. I've been sitting on it for a week now. And it's just like, it looks good to a point. It plays good to a point. The difficulty spike was really awful. And took away from my enjoyment, especially because it's in the end game where the crazy twist happens and you're supposed to enjoy it even more. I guess because it's a 10-year-old game, I can say this did the multiverse thing when the comics were doing it. Like, when it kind of became a big deal in the comics, and now it's becoming a big deal in the movies, and people are getting sick of it. But it was on the cutting edge of multiverse things. So it's cool. It's fine. It's fun. It's not my game of the year. I can see why it was important when it came out.
I love that that's the conclusion we come to with so many of these games, because we're able to find like very specific things that bother us.
Yes. something else that bothered me. Because of the multiverse thing, Or I guess it's a different timeline. It diverts from the timeline that we know of. And so that's why technology is different. There were a bunch of times when I was walking through the streets and a radio would be playing or people would be singing songs and I knew the lyrics, but it was a crazy different tune playing with it. And it sounded so cool. I think one of the songs was Fortunate Son by CCR, and it was a really good remix, I guess. But there's no OST that I could find.
That sucks.
And I was upset by that, because I enjoyed all the songs that I heard in the streets.
Open up the source files. I believe in you. Hacker Man.
I don't know how to edit. Like, it's fun. It was important to the gaming world.
How long was your total playtime?
That's a good question.
Oh. Ooh.
11.2 hours.
That's not bad.
And that doesn't include any of the DLC that's included. I don't really know if I want to play those. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair. You enjoyed it more than I thought you were, because whenever you would give me any, like, hint as to what was going on, it sounded like you weren't enjoying yourself very much, and that was kind of weird, because I thought you'd like this one a lot more than the first Bioshock, because that one's a lot... I don't know. It's less fun. I think it's a better game, but I don't think it's as fun, like, moment to moment as this one is.
Yeah, this one felt like it was designed to be faster. In the Call of Duty age, so the gunplay is snappier.
That's why half the fandom didn't like it. They're like, no, it's not dark and depressing enough. It is too fast.
Right. The action is just faster in general. I liked that. I think the first Bioshock is kind of slow and a bit of a slog, despite it being really, really good. I want to go back to the story where I say it's kind of paint by numbers, because it's like, it's so much of, I need to go here and get the thing. I need to go here and talk to the guy. Oh, he's not here. I gotta get the thing to talk to the guy. It's a lot of that.
Yeah.
And it felt like backtracking, because that's the best keyword I have to explain it. But it's... there's like three times in the story that you try to escape the city and you get interrupted, and the gondola is attacked and Elizabeth is Princess Peached. Like, I don't know.
Big sky bird.
Yeah. I said that there was a lot of backtracking. You're like, what? I don't remember any of that. And
yeah, that makes sense.
That's just how it felt.
Yeah. No, I get that. Well.
So there.
Yeah.
Good game. I guess.
So next month I will be playing Jedi Fallen Order, and we will be talking about movie of indeterminate title.
Ooh.
At moment.
Ooh.
Should probably make it Tomb Raider. We need something halfway enjoyable.
Can you remember the title that I just told you before we started recording of what I'm playing?
No.
I'm playing a weird PC game called The Return of the Obra Dinn.
It rings a bell, but I don't know why. Do you know why I would know that?
No.
Damn.
It made a big splash. Not too long ago, but I've been waiting for a sale, and I got it on sale finally, and it's certainly a game.
Oh, boy.
We're gonna see how it goes.
Oh, boy.
I streamed it for an hour and a half last night, and I'm like, well, I'm stuck. Stream's over.
Oh boy. Well, we'll see how that turns out. And we'll have actual news to discuss.
Maybe
the Activision Blizzard breast milk will return.
Oh, please. Let it go.
No.
Let go of the titty.
I will not let go of the titty. You can't make me.